Today, of course, we are speaking about Govardhan Lila, Sri Krishna as Govardhan Dhari, Giridhari.
Конечно, сегодня мы будем говорить о Govardhan Lili, о Sri Krishna как Giridhari или Govardhan Dhari.
I pray for the blessings of the senior Vaishnavas gathered here.
Я молюсь, чтобы старшие Вайшнавы, которые находятся здесь, дали мне свое благословение.
Who insisted that I speak today?
Они настояли, чтобы я сегодня говорил.
As an attempt to render service to the Vaishnavas, as well as an attempt to speak a little of the unlimited glories of Giri Govardhan.
И как попытку удовлетворить всех этих Вайшнавов и также рассказать безграничную частичку безграничной славы Гири Говардхана.
I'll attempt to say something.
Я постараюсь что-то сказать.
Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Let us consider Sri Giriraj, Govardhan Hill, through parampara. We can begin with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He finally was able to visit Vrindavan and just see in your mind's eye Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approaching Govardhan Hill. He was coming from Radhakund. And by the time he reached the Sumanas Lake, he saw Govardhan Hill. As soon as he saw Govardhan Hill, he fell to the ground in Dandavats and took a stone from Govardhan Hill, embraced the stone, and became mad just by embracing. In this way, just as Krishna showed when he lifted Govardhan Hill, Krishna as Lord Chaitanya is showing the extraordinary significance of Govardhan. Next, Lord Chaitanya went to the temple of Haridev, which you'll still find today. Overwhelmed with ecstatic love, he danced before the deity. He took his lunch at Brahmakund and then began to circumambulate Govardhan Hill in ecstasy. He bathed in Manasaganga. As he was circumambulating Govardhan Hill, he was thinking, I want to see Gopal Rai, the deity, but the deity is on top of Govardhan Hill. I am a devotee. I cannot walk on Govardhan Hill. This is Lord Chaitanya's bhakta abhimana, his self-conception as a devotee. He's thinking like that, but Gopal Rai is also thinking. Just as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality Godhead, can think, so can the deity, Gopal Rai, the Supreme Personality Godhead. Gopal Rai made a trick how to come down from Govardhan Hill. And Lord Chaitanya had darshan for 3 days of Gopal Rai. You may know the details of how Gopal Rai engineered the fear of a Muslim attack. And therefore the deity came down from Govardhan Hill and Lord Chaitanya could see him in a nearby village. Following in his footsteps, Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis also did not walk on Govardhan Hill, and again Gopal Rai made a trick and came down from the top on the plea of rumors of Muslims attacking. When Lord Chaitanya resided in Jagannath Puri, we see again the significance of Govardhan Hill. Raghunath Das Goswami records this in his book Gauranga Stava Kalpavriksha. Samipe Niladresh Chatakagiri Raja Shakalanad Aye Goshte Govardhana Giripatim Lokitum Itaha Vrajanasmit Yuktva Pramada Iva Davan Navritto Ganaiswaya Gaurango Hridaya Udayan Mam Madayati. Translation. Near Jagannath Puri is a great sand dune known as Chataka Parvat. Seeing that hill, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Oh, I shall go to the land of Braj to see Govardhan Hill." Then he began running madly toward it, and all the Vaishnavas ran after him. This scene awakens in my heart and maddens me. If we look at our recent parampara, we also see, certainly, the significance of Govardhan Hill. But let's talk about Lord Chaitanya walking on the beach in Jagannath Puri. It seemed like a normal walk on the beach. Lord Chaitanya was going to take his bath. But Lord Chaitanya's vision is such of always seeing separation from Krishna. Mahaprabhu is demonstrating the ecstasy of not having Krishna's presence and always longing for Krishna's presence. Therefore, upon seeing what we would say is an ordinary sand dune, Lord Chaitanya suddenly saw Govardhan Hill. Now you may say, well, is this some kind of hallucination? Is this some kind of religious illusion? Please understand that pure love of Krishna is the reality and everything else is the hallucination. So in that way, we need to adjust our conceptions if we're actually going to understand what is the ultimate goal of life. For example, mundane historians have a different vision of Lord Chaitanya. One British scholar of the day, present during the time of Mahaprabhu, wrote in his little history, he wrote that this Sri Chaitanya was doing great as a social reformer. He was upsetting the caste system. He was bringing about equality for everyone. But then what happened to him? The last years of his life, he went mad, and all his glorious social welfare work was ruined. So that's the mundane conception. Of course, we know that the last years of Lord Chaitanya's presence in this world, he was demonstrating the pinnacle of spiritual existence. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, what is night for one class of human beings is day for the other, and vice versa. So again, I ask you to think, was Lord Chaitanya, when he saw the Chataka Parvat sand dune, was he simply hallucinating or was he seeing reality? So you may say, but a sand dune is a sand dune. But to the pure devotee, Govardhan Hill is Govardhan Hill. Now you choose your reality. In other words, by Lord Chaitanya seeing what is apparently an ordinary sand dune as Govardhan Hill, he's showing the topmost reality of love of Krishna. In other words, the vision of pure love is the fact. Everything else is an illusion. Lord Chaitanya is showing you what the real world is. But in our conditioned mentality, we say, oh, the real world is that it's simply a sand dune, that's all. And maybe Lord Chaitanya has worked himself into a rarefied state of religious ecstasy, mistaking a sand dune for Govardhan Hill. But no, Lord Chaitanya is showing how to really see, how to really live. He's showing that there is no higher state of existence than love of Krishna and separation. It's the same thing that you hear in the Shikshastaka, where the Lord Chaitanya says, Shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. Prabhupada once gave a very ecstatic dramatization of that verse. Lord Chaitanya is saying, I see the whole world as empty, zero, shunya, because I'm separated from Krishna. So Prabhupada in his dramatization said, was responding to someone's challenge. Shunya? Zero? Empty? How can you say that? Look around you. The whole world is so active. There's so much hustle and bustle, activity. How can you say shunya? Nothing. But no, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says shunya is nothing. It's empty without Krishna's presence. That is real vision. That's the real world. And through bhakti, we gradually become adjusted to being in the real world. During the time of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he set up headquarters in Mayapur. And he had Govardhan Hill there. He had stones from Govardhan brought to Mayapur, and there, under his direction, was made a Govardhan Hill of actual stones from Govardhan. So even today in Mayapur, you can circumambulate Govardhan Hill. And our Srila Prabhupada, in his very last days, expressed a desire to circumambulate Govardhan Hill. To the materialist, Govardhan Hill is just a worn-down mound of earth. But to the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, Govardhan Hill is non-different from Krishna. The devotee sees that, but sometimes even elevated souls, demigods such as Indra, have a problem. You know how the challenge to Indra's ego began. Now I want you to understand that Krishna, little Krishna, was not simply concerned with Indra's ego. He also wanted to increase the prema of the residents of Vrindavan. Dismantling egos is not Krishna's prime pastime. But sometimes, in our conditioned mentality, we fear that, oh, what is Krishna going to do to my ego? How is he going to attack my attachments? Krishna's prime pastime is bhakta vatsala, always increasing the affectionate exchanges with his devotees. So he utilized Indra's excessive pride to increase the love of his dear devotees. You know how Nanda Maharaj wanted to begin the traditional and yearly Indra Puja. What's the big deal? Krishna asked him, what's all this preparation for? What's happening? Can you please explain it to me? Nanda Maharaj was beaming with a smile, and in a very jolly way, he began to explain to Krishna about the Indra Puja. You know the conversation, but I want you to focus on the emotional moods. A 7-year-old little boy asking his father, what is this religious ceremony? The father's face beaming with a smile in a jolly way begins to explain to his little son. What could be more innocent than that? So Nanda Maharaj explained, we do this yajna every year. It's for Indra. He kindly sends us the rains so that the grass grows and our cows will be prosperous, and then we will also be prosperous. What was Krishna's response? Kavi Karnapur gives us some details. Krishna heard this explanation as bitter words. And Krishna also disguised his disturbance and began to respond to his father. So Krishna didn't let his real feelings show. If you ever wonder why in Indian culture people don't show their real feelings when they're upset, you can blame it on Krishna. So Krishna calmly began to take apart Nanda Maharaj's presentation. We'll briefly review Krishna's presentation because it has significance even for us today in our rebellion against Krishna. Krishna said, why is Indra Puja needed? Everything is brought about by karma. You don't need to worship demigods. You just do the right thing, the right result will come. Your work produces reactions. Reactions, if they're good, you're happy. If the reactions are bad, you suffer. This is the cosmic truth. Furthermore, Krishna said, don't even bring up inspiration from the Supersoul. The actual truth is that we're all led around by our conditioned nature and inclinations. Don't try, in other words, to bring the Supersoul into the picture. What about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate source, the ultimate cause, Sarvakarana Karanam? Don't bring him into the picture either. He is detached from the creation, and everything is done by the three modes of material nature. So in this way, there's no need to please Indra. You think of karma, you think of your bodily propensities and inclinations, and you think of the three modes of nature. What's so special about pleasing Indra? When he sends the rains also cause distress. People get sick, people get depressed. And what was Krishna's ultimate proof? Do the mountains and oceans worship Indra? The mountains and oceans don't do any Indra Puja, yet rain falls profusely on mountaintops and on bodies of water. Therefore, the conclusion is, forget the Indra Puja, take all the materials that have been gathered for the yajna, and we should worship Govardhan Hill. Krishna reminded Nanda Maharaj, Govardhan Hill is not called that simply because Govardhan is a name. Govardhan's name means what it does. It increases the nourishment and health of the cows. Go and Vardhana. So Krishna pointed to the immediate situation, the immediate environment. Our prosperity, our well-being depends on Govardhan Hill. Forget these demigods whose effect is so intangible and unnecessary. These arguments that Krishna presented, although they enrage Indra, they are significant, because even today, with not as much cleverness, of course, people try to deny the significance of religion. Of course, the purpose of Krishna's refuting his father's plan to do Indra Puja, the purpose was to increase ecstatic love of God. And the purpose of so much word jugglery today to deny the Supreme is simply meant so that persons can destroy themselves even further than what they've already done. This theorizing about how religion is unnecessary, Krishna shows you it's nothing new. Here's a latest theory that is rapidly gathering attention. Humanity began with groups of human beings living together in villages of 100 or 150. Everyone knew each other. They're of the same. Physically, they all looked the same, so it was easy for them to cooperate. Each village had its own gods. These gods were in the heavens, in the underworld, in nature all around. These gods were extremely passionate and unpredictable. You had to offer them sacrifices, you had to appease them. But then, the speculation goes, that as society developed, there arose a need for super religions. So we're speaking about the speculations Krishna made up. They're much better than the current speculations of today by puny human beings. So the speculation today is that through the Darwinian process of the survival of the fittest, only the super religions triumphed. The small-time religions of villages faded away. Why is that? Because the super religions presented one all-knowing, all-powerful interventionist God. This all-powerful, all-knowing interventionist God would dispense justice. He would see everything, and he would take action, whether you did good or bad. So the speculation is that these super religions were much better for social cohesion and solving conflicts. Instead of presenting that there's a god of the river, a god of the ocean, a god of the trees, you have one super god who enforces law and order. In this way, as society became more complicated, people had a reason to behave properly. The sociological theory is that watched people who know they're being watched, they become nice people. People who know they're being monitored by a super god will behave themselves. So this belief allowed society to become more complex and become more developed. In the big city, you may not know your neighbors, but the super god in their heart knows what they're doing. And therefore, everyone will try to be on good behavior, because they know the super god is seeing everything and he will punish you. So the speculation is that in this way, the religions that we have today that triumphed through the Darwinian system, they became prominent. But now what's happening? Societies have sophisticated justice systems, police systems. Surveillance is so advanced through technology. So what is the Siddhanta? What is the conclusion? Religion is no longer necessary for social happiness. It's done its job. Its time is over. The idea is that in the past, atheists were never trusted. Sociological surveys throughout the world show that people think atheists are incapable of moral integrity. Why? Because an atheist doesn't believe anyone's watching him or will punish him. Therefore, atheists are not simply disliked in general, but they're not trusted. They're not accountable to anyone. But now that society has become so sophisticated, there's no need for believing in religion in order to be an accountable person. Examples are given, especially in Scandinavia, of societies in which practically no one believes in God, yet they are harmonious, stable societies. So in this way, you can see, supposedly, that the future is to climb up the ladder of religion and then throw it away. Sounds very ingenious, huh? After all, everyone wants social peace and cohesion. What was Krishna's version of social peace and cohesion? Stop worshiping Indra. Our peace, our harmony depends on Govardhan Hill. Who is this Indra? What does he do anyway? Indra is socially irrelevant. He serves no practical purpose. Let's live in the real world. Let's be practical. The real world means Govardhan Hill. Let's do puja for Govardhan Hill. That is the ultimate reality. And Krishna is going to show that also. Just like in the middle of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna shows his universal form. Similarly, Krishna is going to show something to the residents of Vrindavan. So joyfully, the Brijbasis prepared to worship Govardhan Hill. They had the most extraordinary feast that they offered to Govardhan. And then Krishna pointed out, just look on top of Govardhan Hill. What do you see? Because you have pleased Govardhan Hill by your offerings, Govardhan Hill is showing you that he's a personality. Look at him up there. Have you ever seen such a form on top of Govardhan Hill? Whom is Krishna referring to? He's talking about himself. He's down on the ground with the Brijbasis, and he's pointing to an expansion of himself. Look, look, look at that on top of the hill. Amazing. You've all done so nicely in worshiping Govardhan Hill, and now you see the result. Raghunath Das Goswami says that even Srimati Radharani was deceived by this appearance of Krishna as Govardhan Hill. So as Krishna directed everyone's attention to his form on top of Govardhan Hill, he and everyone else paid their obeisances. Krishna's paying obeisances to himself. Then it's time for circumambulation. All the residents of Vrindavan began to circumambulate Govardhan Hill. Kavi Karnapur describes the most beautiful sequence. First came the drum players. Behind the drum players came the cowherd boys. The cowherd boys had their sticks for herding cows, and they had their cows with them. In with the cowherd boys was Krishna, laughing and joking with his friends. Behind the cowherd boys came the elder cowherd men like Nanda Gopa, Nanda Maharaj, and the village elders. So are you seeing this parikrama around Govardhan Hill? First the drum players playing drums of different types, and the cowherd boys, including Krishna, and the cows, the elder gopas. Then came the flute and veena players. Behind the flute and veena players came beautiful singers. Behind them were beautiful dancers. Behind the beautiful singers and the beautiful dancers came the gopis on chariots more radiant than what the sun god could ride on. This parade went around and around Govardhan Hill. As they encountered brahmanas in various places, they would make offerings to the brahmanas. At that time, the Yamuna River flowed near Govardhan. So during the parikrama, they all took bath in Yamuna River. What a glorious day, except for Indra. Let us focus on Indra's psychology. Kavi Karnapur describes that first, Indra had a splitting headache. And he became sad. I'm being neglected. The attention meant for me has been taken away. So what began as a splitting headache and sadness soon turned to anger. These cowherd people have the same level of intelligence as the animals they herd. They're listening to an ordinary person. As the Bhagavatam says twice, Krishna Martam Upasritya. They're taking an ordinary person, Krishna, to be the all-in-all. Try to understand, Indra couldn't get this out of his mind. They've taken shelter of an ordinary boy. They're defying me. They're minimizing me. They're not doing things the right way. all because of this talkative boy who is so impudent he dares defy his father, Nandamara. Can you remember at sometimes being very angry because someone minimized you? Because someone interfered with your plans? Isn't it such a rage? Think about it. In this way, I think you will sympathize more with Indra. Our standard vision of Indra is, oh, he was way over the top. But we have to search our heart and see that actually we have the same tendencies, although not expressed in such a grand way. Indra's whole point was, what is Krishna doing? He's taking what is meant for me. Later, after the whole lifting of Govardhan Hill, when Indra approaches Krishna, Govindakund, he'll confess that, Krishna, I thought that you were taking the share of sacrifice for yourself that belonged to me. So this attachment by Indra for the results of the yajna that he thought was all meant for him, this attachment produced such blindness he couldn't see straight. His anger knew no bounds. Therefore, he pressed the weapon of ultimate destruction. He called for the clouds of annihilation meant to finish off the whole universe. He called them to attack Vrindavan. Try to understand how extreme this is. These clouds are meant to finish off the whole universe, and Indra told them, focus on this little village of Vrindavan. Indra ordered them with affectionate glances. He reassured them, I'll be there with you. We're in this together. You, the clouds, and I, we're going to finish Vrindavan. So again, think, what madness would bring Indra to such a conclusion? And then, let's think about ourselves. In my travels around the world, I've noted, because I've asked, that many devotees admit they have some grudge against Krishna. Let's think about this. And I want you to search your heart for some lumps, hard lumps in the heart due to this resentment. Krishna, I've served you so much. I've chanted your name so much. And you let this happen to me. You let that happen to me. I surrendered to you so much. And still, I became sick. I lost money. I didn't get the most beautiful wife. Other devotees have more money than me. I don't get recognition. I don't get appreciation. Why, Krishna? Why? I'm your devotee. I'm serving you so much. Haven't you noticed? How could you let this happen to me, your devotee? So especially at festivals in Ukraine, in Russia, I've asked this question. And I'm amazed how hundreds of devotees raise their hands and say, yes, I have to admit, I've got a little problem with Krishna. Now think about it. You may try to hide it away deep in your heart. But those lumps may be there. And as long as those lumps are in our heart, we can't cry out to Krishna in kirtan with maximum feeling. Krishna, you didn't do it my way. You did something to me that I never expected, never planned for. That causes scar tissue in the heart. Here we have a wonderful example before us. My dear godbrother, Urjaswat Prabhu. Some years ago, he was in a temple giving a Bhagavatam class, speaking the glories of the Bhagavatam. Mid-sentence, he froze, stopped speaking. So the devotees were watching. Could this be some kind of ecstatic symptom? They watched. He's still frozen. Maybe this is not ecstasy. Finally, it hit someone. This could be a medical situation. So they called the ambulance. He was taken to the hospital. When he came to consciousness, darkness was all around him, and a medical man was in front of him saying, you had a stroke. You had a stroke. He was describing to me this extraordinary feeling of just coming to consciousness in a totally unknown place, not knowing what happened or where you were or why. Now what should he think? He's been serving Krishna for so many decades. He's doing Krishna's work, speaking Bhagavatam class, traveling and preaching. This is how Krishna treats his devotees? Having a stroke while giving Bhagavatam class? What kind of God is this? What is this bhakti? he's speaking Bhagavatam, he's doing Krishna's service, everything materially should be rosy. Of course, our Urjaswar Prabhu knows that the material world, on the material platform, will never be rosy. Bhakti, devotional service, is that rose that blooms eternally. But ordinarily, a devotee would blame Krishna. I'm trying to serve you even in my senior years, and this is what you do to me? Now, it may be a little human of us to think that way at first. A few days ago at the Krishna Balaram Mandir, Harisari Prabhu was giving class. And he was describing what Prabhupada told him about his taking sannyas, leaving his family. He was in Delhi and he saw a calf. And he went to pet the calf. And the mother calf got the mother cow got angry and just knocked him on the ground. So Prabhupada told Harisari Prabhu that the first thought that came to my mind was, this is a reaction because I left my family. That was the first thing that came to his mind, he said. But then, of course, he focused on carrying out the mission of his spiritual master. So my point is that devotees, we have our human side. Nevertheless, what predominates our life is knowledge. The knowledge that Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala, always arranging loving exchanges with his devotee. You may look at what Indra did to Vrindavan and think, how could Krishna let that happen? The environmental havoc that Indra caused upon Vrindavan, it was horrible. The residents of Vrindavan and the cows were suffering. Apparently, the acharyas explain that actually they never had material anxiety. What they were feeling was simply a prelude to their increasing their relationship with Krishna. One acharya describes it in this way. How significant is it when you to consider a hunger pang after you had an extraordinary feast? After you have the feast today, somehow you may think, oh, is that a hunger pain that I feel? Can't be. I've packed myself so much today. Whatever I'm feeling, it's not significant. Because I know the reality. So the acharyas explain, that's how you should see the apparent suffering in Vrindavan when Indra attacked. Oh, look out there. Look at the suffering. And then, ooh, they are full with Krishna Prem. That fullness in Krishna Prem is the actual reality. And the apparent suffering is just some insignificant twinge, which will make them appreciate their relationship with Krishna even more. If we fail to understand Krishna's dealings as Bhakta Vatsala, we'll have a little trouble with our spiritual life. And that little trouble in our spiritual life, make it bigger and bigger. Because there's a blockage in our spiritual system, resentment against Krishna. Because we're devotees, we don't want to express that out loud. That, Krishna, you let me down. How did you let me down? You didn't give me what I wanted. You dared to do things not my way. After all I've done for you. After all I've given up for you. This is how you treat me. You allow this to happen to me and that to happen to me. These little hard spots can become bigger and bigger. And in this way, we lose our vision for being able to understand Krishna's pastimes. We also lose our vision for understanding how Krishna is dealing with us. Therefore, bhakti requires guidance, both in our understanding of Krishna Leela and in our understanding of our own spiritual progress. Okay, let's go underneath Govardhan Hill. Krishna has just lifted it. Lord Chaitanya, when circumambulating Govardhan Hill, would recite a verse that's now in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The verse focuses your attention on the left hand of lotus-eyed Krishna. That left hand holding up Govardhan Hill, may it protect us. That left hand of lotus-eyed Krishna held Govardhan Hill as if it were a toy. When Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, it made a roaring sound as it separated from its base. Higher and higher the hill went into the air. So much so that the lions on top of the hill began batting away the clouds with their paws. And with their claws, the lions would rip apart the clouds. That's how high the top of Govardhan Hill is. Krishna invites all the residents of Vrindavan. Come underneath. One thing you should remember is that Krishna was angry with Indra. The verses you read in Bhagavatam before Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, he's expressing anger. The residents of Vrindavan and the cows were all appealing to Krishna for protection. So Krishna spoke 4 or 5 verses declaring his determination to do something about this situation. He concluded by saying, Vrindavan is my home. The cowherd people are my family. And then he lifted Govardhan Hill and invited everyone. Don't be attached to your houses. Come under the hill. Krishna knows how to deal with attachments. So he assured the Brijbasis, I know you're a little attached to your residences, but under this hill is very nice. And indeed, what was happening underneath the hill? Boulders have fallen off the hill and have formed a perimeter wall around the base of Govardhan Hill. In other words, underneath Govardhan Hill is now a valley because Krishna has lifted the hill. And circling that valley underneath the hill are boulders which are keeping all the rainwater out. So Krishna's inviting everyone, come under here, it's so nice. What do you think? Would you have believed Krishna and gone under the hill? Come on, you live in the real world, eh? What would you have done if Krishna invited you? A 7-year-old boy holding up this hill on the finger of his left hand? Would you have listened? You'd have had doubts, right? Or you'd have tried to have it both ways? Yes, Krishna, we appreciate you, but... So Krishna coaxed the Brijbasis. He, come on, come under. Look, it's so nice here. Of course, they have no hesitation to do what Krishna wants. After all, they stopped the Indra Puja just on the instruction of Krishna. And what was underneath in the valley under the hill? Everything was beautiful. Crystal lakes, fields of grains. Everything was opulent in a natural way. No one felt any hunger or thirst. Why? Because they were all absorbed in staring at Krishna. That was the main activity of the Brijbasis under Govardhan Hill. Staring at Krishna's beauty. Now, usually, according to Vedic etiquette, you don't talk excessively about someone's glories right when they're present. You don't want to embarrass the person, so you do it in a more tactful way. But underneath Govardhan Hill, Krishna is there, and everyone is just overwhelmed, so they're just talking about the beautiful sight of staring at Krishna's body, even though Krishna's right there. So in this way, no one felt any hunger or thirst. And Krishna, he's staring at all his devotees, and he feels no hunger and thirst. But Mother Yashoda has a hard time believing that. How it is that he's holding up the hill, first of all, and secondly, he must be so hungry and tired. Krishna's having his own festival. What is he doing? He's looking at the beautiful forms of the young girls. This is God. He knows just what to do. He knows where the best pleasure is. And the Shastra describes that sometimes as he's looking at the young girls, his left arm starts to shake. That is the way it is with Krishna. He knows what is the supreme pleasure. Now, let us understand that as Bhakta Vatsala, Krishna knows how to reciprocate with every devotee, not just the gopis. So each resident of Vrindavan underneath the hill thought, Krishna's looking straight at me. Everyone is absorbed in staring at his beautiful form. And Madha Mangal decides it's time for some jokes. Krishna, why are you endeavoring so much holding the hill? Just call me forward. I'll put my golden stick under the hill, and I'll hold it up for you. One thing, please note, that Krishna had already given an explanation to the Brijbasis about his apparently lifting the hill. When he was inviting them under the hill, he said, actually, I'm not holding up the hill. The hill is floating on my finger of its own strength. Just see, my Brijbasis, if Govardhan Hill could assume a personal form, the same Govardhan Hill, by its own power, can rest on my finger. It's all the power of Govardhan Hill. It's not me. I'm just an instrument. So having faith in the power of Govardhan Hill, it's not simply faith. It's practical experience. Come on under. So as we were saying, Madha Mangal wanted to make some jokes. Okay, Krishna, you've done enough. You've done enough. Transfer the hill to my golden stick. I'll take over. Mother Yashoda didn't appreciate this. She didn't see this as a practical solution. She's looking at Krishna, and she's wondering, his hand is as fresh and soft as butter. How can his hand hold up Govardhan Hill? He must be so tired. It must be so weary for him. Mata Mangal continued to make jokes. He knew that Krishna appreciated his jokes. Mother Yashoda, meanwhile, is praying to Govardhan Hill. If you have any power at all, kindly make it so that you're so light upon my boy's hand. Please hear my prayer. What was Krishna's response? Mother, this is the greatest fun! And I told you that Govardhan Hill has its own power. It's just resting on my finger of its own potency. Mother Yashoda didn't exactly accept it. He said, Krishna, if it's true what you say, that Govardhan Hill has its own power, then let Govardhan Hill leave your finger and fly off into the air. Then I'll be peaceful. Nandamaraj entered into the situation. He told Mother Yashoda, you shouldn't be upset with Mata Mangal's jokes. He's just, he's being diplomatic, and that's the job of an intelligent devotee. He's just trying to ease the situation. Plus, he also knows that Krishna likes his jokes. So, this is just a short sample of life under Govardhan Hill. The glories of Govardhan Hill, of course, are endless. And by Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill, he's eternally celebrated by the devotees. Remember, he was not simply dismantling the pride of Indra. He was bringing the Brijbasis closer to him in ecstatic love. When Lord Chaitanya saw the Chatakaparva, the sand dune in Jagannath Puri, he was actually seeing Govardhan Hill. He began running towards the sand dune at the speed of mind. Speed of wind, speed of mind, faster than any human being could run. And suddenly he stopped, frozen in his steps, and started tottering, swaying, overwhelmed by all the 8 ecstatic symptoms at once. His servant, Govinda, was running after him, but no one could catch him. So many devotees began running after Lord Chaitanya. You attain eternal fame in the Shastra just for running after Lord Chaitanya when he's in his ecstasy. So they're running after Lord Chaitanya, and suddenly Lord Chaitanya stops quivering in ecstasy. And then Lord Chaitanya collapses to the ground. The devotees finally catch up with him. And what they see brings tears to their eyes. They saw Lord Chaitanya's transcendental form like a battlefield of various transcendental ecstasies. All of the Ashtasattvika Vikar, the 8 ecstatic symptoms, were happening simultaneously. Govinda was the first to reach him, and he had tried sprinkling water all over Lord Chaitanya's body and fanning it with a cloth. But Lord Chaitanya could not be revived. Then all the devotees caught up, and they gathered around Lord Chaitanya. They poured cold water over his body, and they were chanting Hare Krishna. Suddenly, Lord Chaitanya came to partial external consciousness. See, Kaviraj Goswami describes that Lord Chaitanya inhabited 3 phases of ecstasy. Internal absorption in ecstasy, partial absorption in internal ecstasy, and external consciousness. But Kaviraj Goswami points out that all 3 phases were different manifestations of ecstatic love of Krishna, even so-called external consciousness. So when Lord Chaitanya came to partial external consciousness, he suddenly stood up and said, Hari Bol! And all the devotees began to chant, Hari! Hari! As Lord Chaitanya stood up, he was looking here and there, as if trying to see something that he lost sight of. And then he began to explain. I was at Govardhan Hill because I knew that Krishna would be tending his cows there. And indeed, Krishna came surrounded by cows on all sides, and he was playing his flute. I waited a little longer, and I saw Srimati Radharani and her gopi associates come, attracted by Krishna's flute. And then I saw Krishna and Srimati Radharani enter into a cave at Govardhan. The gopi associates asked me to pick some flowers for the divine couple. Just then a loud noise disrupted the scene. And here I am. What happened? I was seeing Krishna's pastimes, and now I'm taken away from that. I had a chance to see Krishna's pastimes. Now I've lost it. Lord Chaitanya began to cry, and all the devotees began to cry with him. Then, senior Vaishnavas, Paramananda Puri, Brahmananda Bharti, came along. They're elders, so they couldn't run as fast as the other devotees. Seeing his elders present before him, Lord Chaitanya went into external consciousness, and he respectfully addressed them. Yes, why are you here? They, Paramananda Puri and Brahmananda Bharti, responded, "We came just to see your dancing." Lord Chaitanya felt self-conscious and a little embarrassed. So now he was in external consciousness. He went with his associates to bathe. So this is one of the countless ways we can always remember the importance of Govardhan Hill for our bhakti progress. Lord Chaitanya is showing what is the pinnacle of bhakti. I was speaking yesterday, 2 days ago, at Krishna Balaram Mandir. There was some discussion about Nectar of Instruction. How Nectar of Instruction says that Govardhan is the highest, and then even higher than Govardhan is Radhakund. Sometimes devotees make the mistake of thinking that although these places are the highest, immediately, that's where I should be. Yes. Yes, they are the highest, but we have to remember what our position is. And remember, what is the first verse of Nectar of Instruction? Controlling the mind, the senses, and so on. Remember the verse in Nectar of Instruction about getting a taste for chanting Hare Krishna? Chat Krishna Nama Charitari. Satopya Vidya. How the holy name is like rock candy, sugar sweet, but our tongues are afflicted by the jaundice of ignorance. Then, after much mature development in bhakti, we might get an indication that we should aspire for eternal residence at Govardhan or Radhakund. Of course, someone with mature vision sees Vrindavan in Navadvip. By approaching Krishna Leela through Lord Chaitanya, that is the safest and most practical way. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that servitude to Lord Chaitanya is the gateway to all the rasas with Krishna. And Prabhupada explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita that so many people are in Vrindavan who want to enter into Krishna Leela, but that is very difficult. But if you approach Krishna Leela through Sri Sri Gornatai, it is very easy. So on the one hand, something is almost impossible to attain. But on the other hand, if you approach through Sri Sri Gornatai, the impossible becomes possible. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.